Welcome to Managing Myeloma. My name is Dr. Donald Harvey. I'm director of Phase 1 Clinical Trials Section and an associate professor in hematology, medical oncology, and pharmacology at the Winship Cancer Institute at Emory University. Today, I'll be discussing practical considerations in multiple myeloma, optimizing therapy with new proteasome inhibitors. These are the learning objectives for today's presentation. Identify and differentiate between some of the new proteasome inhibitors for the treatment of myeloma. Summarize patient selection approaches for each agent, and then outline some practical considerations for utilizing these new proteasome inhibitors in practice. So this is a patient case. This is a woman seen here at Emory with newly diagnosed IgG myeloma. Her IgG paraprotein was 4.3 grams per deciliter at diagnosis. Her hemoglobin is listed here. Her creatinine clearance is reasonable for a woman of her age, and her calcium is normal. Her medical history and home medications include type 2 diabetes. She does have some hypertension, which is stabilized, and some hypercholesterolemia. So overall, we're thinking about treatment options for this woman for induction therapy for her myeloma. When you think about initial therapy for someone, anyone at this age or anyone with newly diagnosed disease, you have to take into account three major issues. One is age, and that really dictates a little bit more performance status, but consideration of autologous transplant as a therapeutic option for patients is often dictated by age, but may be dictated by other comorbidities as well, including things in this patient. She's 64, and so would be a reasonable candidate based on age alone for autologous stem cell transplant. For comorbidities in her specifically with diabetes, you have to consider, does she have any pre-existing neuropathy, which may complicate therapy with proteasome inhibitors and other agents? Does she have any renal dysfunction? If yes, then if we're going to consider lenalidomide, we may need to consider the dose of induction lenalidomide for her. And then again, finally, performance status. In her, she's got quite a good performance status. She seems to be a reasonable candidate for autologous stem cell transplant. Therefore, we need to avoid agents that are toxic to the stem cell compartment, agents like melphalan, as well as prolonged lenalidomide therapy. So looking at some treatment considerations and adverse events with each class of drugs, thinking first about the IMiDs, one key clear adverse event profile for these agents is venous thromboembolic disease, and so prophylaxis with a variety of agents is, should be considered. And generally, aspirin is a reasonable option, but patients who have other risk factors for thromboembolic disease need to be perhaps treated with more aggressive agents like enoxaparin and others. Specifically with lenalidomide, it is renally cleared, so dose adjustment needs to occur in renal dysfunction. Bortezomib, the classic adverse event with bortezomib is neuropathy. It is certainly better when given subcutaneously than given intravenously. And then proteasome inhibitors as a class have a concern of herpes zoster reactivation. So therefore, acyclovir or valacyclovir are needed regardless of the agent. Carfilzomib does have some concerns with cardiac complications, and so patient selection is important there. And then finally, corticosteroids, while still very important in the management of myeloma, do have adverse events profiles. Specifically, in this patient, we need to consider hyperglycemia, and so understanding that she may need to have more aggressive glucose measurements and perhaps have additional agents added as needed, for example, insulin, may be necessary around the time of her corticosteroid dosing. Thinking about the proteasome inhibitors as a class, the three that we have on the market today, bortezomib, carfilzomib, and ixazomib, have some slightly different profiles in terms of structure and inhibition of proteasome and the proteasome subunits. Bortezomib is a reversible inhibitor. It's a boronic acid derivative. It can be given IV or subcutaneously, and again, the incidence of peripheral neuropathy and the severity is dependent upon the route of administration, with subcutaneous administration being preferred. Carfilzomib is an irreversible inhibitor. It's an epoxy ketone. It's given intravenously and overall has a relatively low adverse event profile as it pertains to neuropathy. And then finally, ixazomib, the first oral proteasome inhibitor. It's also reversible. It's also a boronic acid derivative, and it has a relatively low incidence of severe peripheral neuropathy. Thinking about induction therapy and whether or not to include proteasome inhibitors, there's been a recent trial that was presented at ASH last year that compared lenalidomide with dexamethasone at standard dosing to the combination of bortezomib, lenalidomide, and dexamethasone. And these were patients, it's important to note, that were relatively ill, meaning that many of them had creatinine clearances that were fairly low. Many of them had a performance status of 2, and certainly these were all patients that would be candidates, though, for induction treatment with one, with 2 or 3 drugs. And so patients, again, were randomized to either 2-drug induction or 3-drug induction. It's important to note that in this trial, when it was initiated, IV bortezomib was the standard route of administration, and it was given, again, in standard doses with lenalidomide and dexamethasone versus lenalidomide and dexamethasone alone. Patients were continued on treatment were given 6 months of treatment with either agent, and then were continued on maintenance overall, or they withdrew consent. So the median follow-up was 55 months with time on maintenance of a little over a year. Everybody received aspirin prophylaxis, and those patients who were on bortezomib also received prophylaxis for HSV. These are the outcomes, and I think this is an important slide in terms of practice-changing data. The combination of bortezomib with lenalidomide and dexamethasone improved not only progression-free survival, but overall survival as well. And again, these were hazard ratios that were statistically different between the two arms. Adverse events are listed here as well, and things you might expect, again, with the IV administration of bortezomib, there were about a third of patients who had grade 3 or higher adverse events as it related to neurologic complications. Similarly, pain and sensory adverse events were higher, as were gastrointestinal adverse events. And again, it's expected that the subcutaneous route would drop these rates and severity of adverse events that were seen with the IV administration of bortezomib. And again, those were statistically different in terms of adverse events between the two arms. But again, the primary takeaway here is that the combination of 3 drugs for induction, including a proteasome inhibitor, is important and is certainly superior to 2 drugs of lenalidomide and dexamethasone alone. So let's take a second case. JP, a 72-year-old gentleman with relapsed disease. He was diagnosed in 2014 with an IgG-kappa with 414 translocation noted on FISH. He was induced with cyclophosphamide, bortezomib, and dexamethasone, and he completed 8 cycles. He had persistent grade 2 peripheral neuropathy after completion of that, when that was noted to be with pain, and he's been on pregabalin to manage that pain over a period of time. His medical history is listed here. He has congestive heart failure with an EF of around 30%, which is managed right now with diuretics and potassium. He has coronary artery disease with a STEMI in 2009 and received a 4-vessel CABG, of which he is medically managed after that as well. He also has now demonstrated, unfortunately, an M spike with progressive disease consistent with the need for additional therapy. So in this patient, there are a variety of considerations to take into account. You might consider the options that are out there now in terms of agents that are approved in this space. A multi-agent carfilzomib-based regimen is something that would be considered. A multi-agent ixazomib could be considered. You might consider lenalidomide, since he's not had that to date. Or pomalidomide is also an opportunity in this space as well. So let's talk first about ixazomib. Again, this is the first oral proteasome inhibitor we have available to us for the treatment of myeloma in the relapse setting. Reversible and selective inhibitor of the beta-5 subunit of the 20S proteasome. And so what it does, much like the other proteasome inhibitors, is really impairs the cell's ability to get rid of proteins. And so it's a little bit like not allowing the cell to get rid of the trash. And so it targets the cell, therefore, for apoptotic death. The recommended starting dose is, it's got a quite a long half-life. It is a prodrug. Ixazomib is converted immediately upon absorption to an active component. It's given weekly on days 1, 8, and 15. And the starting dose is part of the trial that we'll talk about was with lenalidomide, 25 milligrams orally for 3 weeks, and with weekly dexamethasone as well on 28-day cycles. There was early encouraging data in response for combination ixazomib and lenalidomide and dexamethasone, and you can see here over time, patients have respond relatively early. The CR rates do go up over time, and this is based on the data presented by Dr. Kumar and colleagues and published in Lancet Oncology in 2014. This was the trial that led to the approval of ixazomib in combination with lenalidomide and dexamethasone. Over 700 patients were randomized. These are patients that were not refractory to prior lenalidomide or proteasome inhibitor-based therapy, and they were randomized to this three-drug treatment with ixazomib and standard Len-Dex or Len-Dex with a placebo. They're stratified by the number of prior regimens, prior proteasome inhibitor exposure, and staging. And again, these were 28-day cycles. So looking at the efficacy for each arm here, you can see that the progression-free survival was statistically improved in patients with the combination of ixazomib and lenalidomide and dexamethasone. And up and down the line, there were improvements in terms of depth of response as well as overall response. Overall survival had not been reached at the point of presentation of this trial, but overall, each category favored the combination of three drugs with, as opposed to two drugs with lenalidomide and dexamethasone alone. There were some differences in adverse events, and so ixazomib is different from bortezomib and carfilzomib in terms of adverse event ratings. When the three drugs were given together, there were slightly higher rates of nausea and vomiting associated with the oral proteasome inhibitor route. Similarly, the rates of rash were a little bit higher with the three drugs. And we'll talk about adverse events a little bit with the three drugs and how to manage them. However, an important note was that peripheral neuropathy was actually not that different, suggesting that ixazomib has a superior peripheral neuropathy adverse event profile. But it does have rash as a side effect associated with it independently of lenalidomide. And similarly, there are some GI adverse events. So from a pharmacist perspective with ixazomib, there are a few things to take into consideration. It does have quite a long half-life, just under 10 days, and so therefore that supports weekly dosing. There are some drug interactions to be mindful of, although they're not often clinically significant, and those in patients that are receiving agents like rifampin and anti-epileptic agents that may induce cytochrome P453A4. You might want to consider antiemetic supportive care in addition to the dexamethasone that's given with ixazomib. Patients may need an as-needed or even a scheduled dose of something like a 5-HT3 antagonist. Oral ondansetron, for example, may be necessary in many patients to try to prevent some of the nausea and vomiting that was seen in the three-drug combination. Patients do need dose modifications. We have evaluated the use of ixazomib in renal insufficiency in patients with creatinine clearances below 30. The dose of ixazomib should be reduced from 4 to 3 milligrams. Similarly, in patients with severe hepatic impairment, the dose should also be reduced. It's a relatively rare event, but certainly patients with myeloma may have renal insufficiency as part of their disease. Otherwise, there are some modifications that need to be performed with the combination of ixazomib, lenalidomide, and dexamethasone for hematologic and non-hematologic adverse events. So again, there are some inducers and inhibitors in terms of drug interactions that need to be considered. Overall, it is a CYP1A2 substrate, but there's not a clinically meaningful change in exposure of ixazomib in patients on strong CYP1A2 inhibitors. And so overall, the only class of agents that need to be considered are those that induce CYP3A, and so patients need to be optimally, you need to avoid ixazomib in combination with drugs like rifampin. There are other ixazomib combinations that are being considered for movement into the next phase of treatment, combining with cyclophosphamide and low-dose dexamethasone. There was a phase 2 study really looking at the question of the right cyclophosphamide dose in combination with ixazomib, and overall the dose of 300 milligrams per meter squared was superior not only for response rate but also for adverse events. Similarly, combining ixazomib with pomalidomide and dexamethasone has been done in an early phase trial. These are patients that were refractory to lenalidomide and refractory to prior proteasome inhibitors. The phase 2 doses are pending coming out of the ASH meeting, and so there's still a little bit more work to be done with ixazomib combinations, but we look forward to additional opportunities. Moving now to carfilzomib, so the second IV proteasome inhibitor, the ASPIRE trial presented by Keith Stewart and colleagues and published in the New England Journal of Medicine last year, also looked at over 700, almost 800 patients who were randomized and had either between one and three prior regimens. They were not eligible if they were bortezomib or lenalidomide refractory or intolerant to lenalidomide. So these are patients that really would be expected to be sensitive to lenalidomide therapy. The patients were randomized again to either two-drug therapy with lenalidomide and dexamethasone on a standard dose, again 28-day regimens, or doses of carfilzomib, 27 milligrams per meter squared, IV given over 10 minutes with a standard schedule, and then that was split out after 12 cycles to every other week, carfilzomib given 2 days per week. The efficacy is listed here again, statistically improved activity with the three-drug combination, combining carfilzomib with lenalidomide and dexamethasone for progression-free survival. That was statistically different. The overall response rate was also statistically different. The duration of response was also improved with three drugs compared to two. So carfilzomib put itself into this space as well with three drugs, showing superiority to two drugs. And so really this begs the question, is there anyone who, outside of adverse event concerns, who should be getting two-drug therapy with lenalidomide and dexamethasone alone, either in the induction or the relapsed refractory setting? And if patients can tolerate three drugs, then certainly from a disease perspective, they should get three drugs combining with proteasome inhibition. Adverse events are listed here. There were some adverse events that were more common with the three-drug regimen, including hypokalemia. But otherwise, there weren't many that were statistically concerning. Hypertension and cardiac failure, things that we know with carfilzomib are items to be considered, particularly with patient selection, but also in those who have the disease. If you're going to use carfilzomib, monitoring cardiovascular complications is important. So thinking about hydration of patients, if patients have heart failure and you're going to choose carfilzomib, then thinking about the duration or the extent of hydration, and similarly patient selection with low ejection fraction heart failure patients, you might want to consider alternative therapies. So the proteasome inhibitors as a class do have some standard dose reductions. With bortezomib, again, there's the question of IV versus subcutaneous administration. If you have to dose reduce patients receiving bortezomib, receiving it either through IV or subcutaneous routes, the dose reductions are from 1.3 to 1 to 0.7 milligrams per meter squared. Similarly, you may be able to go to just weekly dosing rather than days 1 and 4 in patients who need to have a dose reduction of bortezomib overall. Carfilzomib, there are a variety of doses that have been studied of carfilzomib, but per the product information, the dosing down goes from 27 to 20 to 15 when needed. With ixazomib, it's a little bit of an unusual dose reduction, but 4 milligrams to 3 milligrams weekly, and then the next dose step is 2.3 milligrams. And so that was all noted in early phase trials of dose. So these are some of the things that you would reduce proteasome inhibitors for. Thinking about specifically ixazomib, with rash in general, one would consider lenalidomide dose reductions first, but there are cytopenia and specifically neutropenia and thrombocytopenia adverse events that need to be considered. But because of the shorter half-life of lenalidomide, it's often easier to titrate it compared to ixazomib, thus the recommendation that lenalidomide be the first agent to be dose reduced. So in conclusion with proteasome inhibitors, they continue to be an incredibly important group of compounds in the treatment of myeloma, and they do have activity across the disease spectrum. All three of them are very different in terms of activity as well as adverse event profiles. Carfilzomib and ixazomib are options for relapsed and refractory patients, and so far, really only bortezomib is supported in the induction treatment setting. And there was actually some data released recently that suggested that carfilzomib was not as good as bortezomib in the induction setting. Ixazomib is the first oral proteasome inhibitor in the class. There are likely to be additional agents to come forward with the oral route as an option in myeloma patients. And then finally, adverse events and prevention and management need to be tailored to the agent and to the regimen. For example, again, the combination of ixazomib and lenalidomide, both agents may cause rash, and so one needs to be cognizant of that. Similarly, adverse events of cytopenias, neutropenia, and thrombocytopenia need to be considered in patients receiving two and three drugs. I'd like to thank you for viewing this activity, and for additional resources, please view other activities on the website managingmyeloma.com. Thank you for your attention.